Let's read that 1 John together again. Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of his eyes, and the boasting of what he has, does not come from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away. But the man who does the will of God lives forever. That passage and the hymn that we've just sung can be summed up in one word: worldliness. That's what we're talking about, worldliness. The problem with worldliness is that it inflates the importance of worthless things. Things that actually have little value compared to the things that God offers us. Worldliness affects us in so many different ways, and in many cases in ways that we don't even realise we're being affected by. Worldliness. Well, this dear old man, John, who's nearly 80-odd years old, wants us to be aware of worldliness. Dear old man John wants us to fight worldliness. And dear old man John wants to warn us of the dangers of worldliness. So 3 points this morning. First of all, harsh truth, verse 15. Secondly, a harsh reality, verse 17. And thirdly, a heavenly prize, verse 17. So verse 15, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. What do you think of when you first hear that passage? And what do you think of when you hear of people being described as being worldly? What comes to your mind? Do you think, well, that just means all those rich people? All those really rich people with the massive houses and the fancy cars and the big diamond rings? You think of just those kind of folks? Do any of you watch Formula One in here? Yes? Wow, we see some amazing places, don't we, as the Formula One season goes around the world. Some amazing places, but places that just seem to be overflowing with money. You know, really do, don't they? Well, in the old days, the Monaco Grand Prix was the biggie, wasn't it? That was the most prestigious one. Remember down in the bay, you have all those amazing boats and people having the parties on the back of the boats. You see all the dolly birds walking around and the champagne flowing, all this kind of stuff in Monaco. But now, have you seen Abu Dhabi? The Abu Dhabi Grand Prix obliterates the Monaco Grand Prix. Because in the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, there's wealth beyond imagination. There's even bigger boats, even bigger parties, even richer people, better lights, fancier buildings. It's an unbelievable scene. I've got to be honest with you. When I watch those kind of things on TV, sometimes I think, oh, I wish that was me. I wish I had one of those boats in that bay when having a big party with all the guys from GCC, having a party watching the Formula One racing going by. I wish that was me. Me with that cushy lifestyle. I wish I had a jet plane and I could fly around the world to these different places, seeing all the things that are going on and experience the things that all these people are experiencing. You know, the rich green grass on the other side is very attractive, isn't it, sometimes? And I'm thinking to myself, oh, I wish that was me. Let that be me. Well, that's worldliness. It's a craving for the things of this world. That's what's going on. And John says here, he says, do not love the world or anything in the world. But you know, that concept is alien to the unbeliever. And even the believer struggles with that concept. But it's like speaking a foreign language to some people. And you say, you know, don't crave after worldliness. You know, if we got Noza up here, there'd only be one or two people that could understand it. If he could speak in Farsi and told us all about worldliness, most of us sit there and say, don't know what you're on about. I haven't got a clue. Well, that's what it's like for some people. It's a completely weird concept. But John is saying, hate the world. He's saying, don't love anything in the world. What's he saying? You know, what are you saying, John? Are you potty? You know, I love the world. I'm only here once. I've got to make the best of it, haven't I? Because, you know, once it's gone, it's gone. I've got to live while I can. And remember, he's about 80, so he's probably going a bit senile, is John. What's he on about? Don't love the world. Worldliness brings us down to having a concern solely for the here and the now. And we forget about the eternal and focus on the mortal life above all other things. We have a saying, don't we? In the grand scheme of things. Do you keep saying that? I do, unfortunately. In the grand scheme of things, whatever. Well, in the grand scheme of things, we're placed in an eternal world, a world that's always been and in a world that's always will be. It places you and me before a grand eternal God who made this creation, and it places us before the grand eternal God of heaven, the world that is to come. And in the grand scheme of things, the here and the now is going to quickly fade away and it'll be no more. It's going to disappear. The things we cling to will soon turn to dust. And the harsh truth is this: if we love the world and anything in the world more than we love God, then we're not in Him. That's a harsh truth. If we love the world, if we love our lives, if we love these material things, then we're really not living in true fellowship with the Father. John says, if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. It's a bit harsh, but it's true. You can't have a foot in both camps. It's impossible. You can't pledge allegiance to both sides. Our American dear friends, happy Thanksgiving this last week, pledge allegiance to the flag. We can't pledge allegiance to two sides. You know, I went to an Arsenal match. Phew, blimey, I took my passport with me to get down south. But I went to an Arsenal match with a friend of mine on Wednesday evening. We drove to London and drove back that night. You know, Arsenal, it's an amazing stadium, but it's like visiting the moon. Do you know why? No atmosphere. Talk about boring. It's no place like home, I tell you. But one of the things that struck me as I walked to the ground was this. Some people were selling scarves. Half with Arsenal, half with Montpellier. Is that the hedging their bets, do you think? Come on, Arsenal. Come on. Oh, they're losing. Come on, Montpellier. You think that's what they're doing? Can't pledge allegiance to both teams. I've seen that at Leeds United. We have, like, you got Leeds United scarves, half with Leeds, half with Rangers. Now, that's a bit sectarian, isn't it? But, you know, half and half. But just imagine this. Just imagine you saw half Leeds United, half Manchester United. Yeah, that's just not going to happen, is it? Half Yorkshire, half Lancashire. No, it's just not going to happen, is it, Cozzy? It's not going to. Half Conservative, half Tory. Even worse than that, half Republican, half Democrat. No, it is not going to happen. You can't have a foot, or you can't love both teams. You get the point. Well, here John is saying you can't love both. You can't love equally both camps. Your love for God must eclipse anything else. Your love of worldly things must stop. But that doesn't mean you don't try to make a good life for yourself. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't look after your family. Some people have given so much away in the past. The early church fathers, I do believe, behaved like this. They gave so much away that they actually lived in terrible poverty, and their families did too. That's not what you're being told to do here. You're not being told to not look out for your friends and care for your friends. It doesn't mean that you can't treat yourself to things sometimes. It doesn't mean that it's wrong to actually look out for another person and want love from that person. God made us people who can create, people who can work, people who can achieve things. He made us men and women with wants and with passions and with desires. Those things are human, and not all of them are sinful. But it does mean that you don't love and crave for those things, especially things of the world, things that draw us away from loving God first and foremost. Our passion should be for God above all passions. Our wants, above all other wants, should be for a closer walk with Christ Jesus. And God demands that of us. And God deserves that of us. But point two, harsh reality. Look at this, verse 16 with me. For everything in the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of his eyes, the boasting of what he has and does, comes not from the Father, but from the world. We may think that wealth and greed is the greatest and the biggest of all vices, but I don't think it is. We all can fall into these realities. And the commentators that I've read break these down into 3 points. The flesh, lust, which is lust of the eyes, and then pride. You could also put possessions, the love of possessions, into pride too. But if we think of these worldly things, first of all, the cravings of sinful man. This is the flesh we're talking about. You see people who crave for a perfect body, don't you? Body perfect people all around us. You see models on your television screens strutting their stuff. You see bodybuilders pumping away, going for the six. Apparently, 8-pack is what you want nowadays. 8, not 6 anymore, 8. So if you've worked up to a 6, you're in the past, you need an 8. But people who are craving after body, you know, perfect body. Didn't know that, did you, Joanna? 8 packs. K- keep working, keep working. You and me will go jogging together later. But think of all the fitness clubs you see around the place. Just over the hill, they're building a new wellbeing centre for £33.5 million. All we're talking about is a fancy gym. That's what it's there for, fancy gym. But you know, that's what people are after. Beauticians, plastic surgeons. It's all about a perfect body. You know, anything that sticks out, we can sort it out, these kind of people will say to you. Let me do it. People that walk around saying, look at me, I'm so beautiful. And they're not bothered about the time or the cost to them. They just want a perfect body. And you know, there's images all over the place that enforce this perception upon us. And we can start to feel very inadequate, can't we? There's billboards. Just drive into town and have a look at the billboards. Look at your magazines and the adverts in your magazines. Look at the television. People crave to be like these perfect specimens. You know, there are those who crave food. I don't like to touch this subject. Some of us struggle a bit with food, chocolates, but they crave to the point where it affects their health. For some, it does become a genuine struggle. It doesn't necessarily mean it's right, but you know, just like those who crave perfection in their bodies, there are those who crave happiness in food. Someone said to me this week, you're fat. That's nice, isn't it? You're fat. But it's okay, Pam came to my rescue. She said, he's not fat, he's just getting a little portly. I thought, come on. That's defence, isn't it? Really kind, that. But you know, the point is this, we can have an image of ourselves that is of this world. An image that we have to achieve to be like something. Whether it's a beautiful body, whether it's wearing fine, beautiful clothes. And these things become massive to us. And we succumb to the world's trappings when we become like that. You know, I know a dear lady, a lovely Christian lady, who will not leave the house until her face is plastered, until she's fully made up. She will not walk out the house. And she'd be mortified to think that anybody has seen her without her makeup on. She's a lovely Christian lady, but why? Because she'd been tainted by the world and its views. She's been messed up by how she feels the world is going to look at her. Her self-esteem is zero because of the worldly images all around her that emphasize to her what she thinks she isn't. The views of the world have become so strong that she's forgotten how beautiful she actually is in the eyes of her Saviour and how beautiful she is to her friends too. We should never develop in this church a craving for a body-perfect church where we have a certain way of looking and a certain way of dressing, a certain way of talking. These are just some of the physical cravings that we can have. But then there's also the lust of the eyes. Just think for a second of all the unhelpful sexual images and nudity that have deluged our TV programs and films. You can't watch a film or watch a television program with being swamped by these images. John is saying the cravings of the world are affecting us by our lustful eyes. You know how easy it is for us to lust after other people. Lust over their possessions. Lust over their wealth, lust over their cars, motorbikes if you're me, lust over their houses and their clothes, and then lust over people's wives, lust over people's husbands. Wherever we look, we take in information and images that aren't good for us, and they harm us. We take in knowledge that's unhelpful to us, images that distort reality. You know, the internet's been a wonderful thing. It gives us so much information, but it's also been a disastrous thing, hasn't it? It has swamped our minds with images which are unholy and unhelpful. In 2003, there was a Hulk movie. I don't know if you ever saw the 2003 Hulk movie. Well, at the end of the Hulk movie, you remember the Hulk, the big green monster, who was full of rage, full of anger. And you know what he's so angry about? He's angry because he is the Hulk. He wants to fall in love and have a normal relationship. He wants to be nice and kind, but he's filled with what he isn't, and he's enraged with it. But at the end of that movie, there's him and his father, and his father's an evil man, an evil monster as well. And his father recognizes, I want his power. I want to get all of his power from him and all this anger, because then he will become more mighty and more powerful. So they get into this weird realm and have a bit of a battle. And he's holding back the Hulk from giving him all this power and getting angry with him, because he doesn't want him to become the mighty, powerful man that he wants to be. But then at one point at the end of that fight, he says, okay, you can have it. Take it. Take it all. And he shouts all this anger and all this frustration out at his father. And his father feeds in on it off all this anger. And he becomes bigger and bigger and bigger into this mighty, powerful monster. And then, boom, He dies. He blows up. He can't basically take it all. Great ending to the film. Obliterated. But you know, your eyes, my eyes, can draw in so much unholy stuff that actually our minds can get blown away by the things that we're taking in. It blows away the image of who we are and what we were created to be. It blows away the image of who God is. And we can start to say to God, okay, it's okay, God, you know, I can deal with all these temptations. I can sustain a good Christian life while walking on the wild side. God, you don't need to be so narrow. Surely you don't need to be so narrow. Let me show you. But then sadly, before you know it, your close walk with God has just been blown away. And your relationship with God has just been obliterated, destroyed, blown into space. You know, the lust of the eyes that destroys the heart. And we must really stand firm in this day and age to protect ourselves and protect our children, if we're parents, from seeing these images that's going to harm us. You know, the 9 o'clock watershed is a joke, isn't it, really? It really is a joke. I mean, we have X Factor every Saturday and every Sunday. Some of the images you see on there are not helpful or holy. They're really not the way people dress. Celebrity, I love Celebrity in the Jungle, but there's a certain young lady on there that doesn't wear many clothes. She wants you to lust after her and ring the phone and say, yes, I'd like to see more of her, and that's why it's happening. We see these things on television programs, children's television programs. You know, if we want to preserve our relationship with God, if we want to be free from the world's grip on our lives, we must say no. We must shut the page. We must turn off the television sometimes, even if the kids go, oh, come on, Dad. Even if your friends say, don't be a prude, don't be boring, come on. What's more important, protection or pollution? What's more important, honouring God or honouring men? And then on to the boasting of what he has and does. You know, pride in oneself and in what we have, it's got no place in the Christian heart. Pride and arrogance in one's intellect, in one's fancy clothes, in one's superior lifestyle, it has no place in the Christian world. It really doesn't. The types of people who we're talking about are those that say, look at me. Aren't I so great? I don't do the stupid things you do and get yourself into all that kind of problem. Look at me. I don't talk the way you do. I talk properly, not proper. Those kind of people. I walk correctly, not lazily. I deserve my wealth. I deserve my health because I look after myself. Do you know the kind of people I'm talking about? Look at you. You're a walking disaster. I've heard that many times. But it's true. We have these people all around us. And even in the church, we can fall into these traps of looking at other people with those kind of eyes. God says that the proud and the arrogant boasting of what he has and what he is has nothing to do with me. And it has no place in my world. Jesus couldn't stand being around these kind of people. Couldn't stand them. Jesus saw right through the exterior of some of these people's hearts and saw right inside them. Because Jesus loved the strugglers. Isn't that lovely? Jesus loved those who stumbled and tripped along in their lives and bumbled along. He loved those people who said, oh, I wish I was better. And he really didn't have much time for those who said, I'm glad I'm not like those sinners. So if you're proud and if you're arrogant, if you look at what you have and think I'm so deserving, aren't I just a cut above the rest? Then we best watch out. We best watch out. Because the world you live in, if that's you, if that's me, it's not the world of Christ. For Christ's world is full of broken-hearted people. It's full of thankful people. It's full of humble people. It's full of forgiven people. Remember, for everything in the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of the eyes, the boasting of what he has, comes not from the Father, but it comes from the world. Point 3, heavenly prize. Verse 17, the world and its desires pass away. But the man who does the will of God lives forever. Isn't that wonderful? That's wonderful. I can't think of any more wonderful promise than that. That the world and all its damaging cravings and desires will pass away. All those harmful ways that separate us from the love of God, they're all going to pass away. What a wonderful thought. But what a marvelous reality that is. That we will be free from eyes that lust. Free from a flesh that craves worldly things. Free from a heart that's proud and arrogant. That will be quite a shock to the system, won't it, for all of us when we eventually become like that. But that's what it's going to be like. It will be. The world and all its desires will pass away, and the perfect way that Jesus meant for us to live, we will live that way. The worldly world we talked about this morning and all its ways will be no more, obliterated, gone, and we shall be free, free to be the people we were created to be, free to feel the way that we were made to feel. That'll be quite a wonderful thing, that will. We'll not be held any longer by the mindset of this world. The influences of the media will be gone, and all other influences will be gone. And the only influence we have that will turn our heads will be the influence of our Maker. You know, we sing this wonderful hymn together. O soul, are you weary and troubled? No light in the darkness you see. There's light for a look at the Saviour and life more abundant and free. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. Isn't that beautiful? That's where it starts for the believer. A look at the Saviour, a look at Jesus. You know, if you want a cure for your lustful eyes, turn to Jesus. If you want a cure from pride, turn to Jesus. If you want to conquer a craving for something, look to Jesus. Love him for what he has done for you and for me. See the cost, see the commitment towards our salvation, see a brighter future. You know, the hymn goes on, through death into life everlasting, he passed and we follow him there. Oh, sin no more hath dominion, for more than conquerors we are. His word shall not fail you, he promised. Believe him and all will be well. Then go to a world that is dying, his perfect salvation to tell. My friends, we need to get a real grip of this, don't we? The best of this life, the best it can give us, will be nothing compared to what is to come. The prize that God offers us is far more valuable and far more lasting than any possessions we can build up in this life. But the glorious thing is this: we can start now to experience this prize. We can start now to get a glimpse of the future by doing the will of the Father. And the will of the Father is that you love him more than any other love. The will of the Father demands that you place beneath him all your worldly thoughts and all your worldly desires, and that you love him above all other loves in your life. And of course, most important, that you love Jesus Christ first and foremost in your life. That's the will of the Father. See what John says: but the man who does the will of God lives forever. Lives forever, not in a fallen world like we see now, not in a world full of sin and pain, not in a world full of wars and unhappiness, but in a world of perfection, a world where all things work for our good. But we must live in the will of God to gain that heavenly prize. C.S. Lewis said this, it's a lovely quote, he said, aim at heaven and you'll get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you get neither. Isn't that right? Aim at heaven, aim at loving God with all of your heart, aim at making a Christ-like life your sole purpose in life. Aim at heaven and its rewards. God throws in the earth for you to enjoy and for us to glorify him in. Aim at the earth, aim at living a worldly life in whatever form it is, and what happens? You gain nothing. My friends, all the riches of this world are nothing compared to the riches of heaven. What a hope. What a promise, what a prize. Let me just finish by reading you a story. It's a lovely story that really illustrates what we're talking about this morning. Jenny was a cheerful 7-year-old girl with bouncy golden curls. She was waiting with her mother at the checkout stand of her local corner shop when she saw them. She saw them, a circle of glistening white pearls in a little pink foil box. Oh, please, Mum, will you get me those pearls? Quickly, Mum checked the back of the little foil box and then looked back at the pleading blue eyes of her little girl's upturned face. £9.95, my love, nearly £10. If you really want them, I'll think of some extra chores for you, and in no time you can save enough money to go and buy them for yourself. Your birthday's only a week away, and you know, you might get a £5 note from your grandma. As soon as Jenny got home, she emptied her piggy bank out onto the floor and counted out the pennies, and it came to £1.50. After dinner, she did more chores than she's ever done before. And she went round to her neighbour's house, Mrs. James. She said, "Mrs. James, can I pick dandelions out of your lawn for a pound?" Which she did. On her birthday, Grandma did give her another £5 note. And at last, she had enough money to buy the pearl necklace. Jenny loved her pearls. They made her feel all dressed up and grown up. She wore them everywhere, Sunday school, playing with her friends, after school clubs, even to bed. The only time she took them off was when she went swimming or had a bubble bath, and Mum used to say to her, "Don't get them wet because they might turn green round your neck." Jenny had a very loving father, and every night when she was ready for bed, he would stop whatever he was doing, he'd come upstairs and he'd read to her a story. One night when he'd finished the story, he asked Jenny, "Jenny, do you love me?" "Oh, yes, Daddy, you know I love you." "Then give me your pearls." "Dad, not my pearls. Not my pearls. You can have my princess, the white horse from my collection, the one with the pink tail. Remember, Daddy, the one you gave me, she's my favourite." "That's okay, honey," Dad says. "Daddy loves you. Good night." And then he brushed her cheek with a kiss. About a week later, after the story time, Jenny's daddy again asked, "Do you love me, Jenny?" "Daddy, you know I love you," she replies. "Then give me your pearls." "Oh, Dad, not my pearls. But you can have my baby doll, the brand new one I got for my birthday. She's so beautiful. And you could also have the yellow blanket that matches her sleeper." "That's okay. Sleep well, my love. God bless you. Daddy loves you." And as always, he brushed her cheek with a gentle kiss. A few nights later, her daddy came in. And Jenny was sitting on the bed with her legs crossed Indian style. And as he came close, he noticed her chin was trembling. And one silent tear rolled down her cheek. "What is it, Jenny? What's the matter?" Jenny didn't say anything, but lifted her hand up to her dad. And when she opened it, there was her little pearl necklace. And with a quiver, she finally said, "Here, Daddy, it's for you." With tears gathering in his own eyes, Jenny's kind dad reached out with one hand to take the corner shop necklace, and with the other hand, he reached into his pocket and pulled out a blue velvet case with a strand of real, genuine pearls and gave them to Jenny. He had them all the time. He was just waiting for her to give up the cheap stuff so that he could give her genuine treasure. You know, that's what our loving Heavenly Father is waiting to do for you and me. He's waiting for us to give up the cheap things of this life so that he can give us beautiful treasures. Don't sell out for second best. Don't be fooled by the cravings of the flesh, the lusting of the eyes, the pride of the hearts. Don't be fooled by this world. And don't love this world. Love Jesus. Love the one who hung on a cross so that you may gain the prize and receive the treasure. Look to him, the one who offers you heaven with the earth thrown in. We're going to stand and we're going to sing the first three verses of this song. And you're going to join in the last two songs, "Will You Come and Follow Me?" So you can follow the words in your bulletin. But you just come and join in the last two verses of this song.